All right, 92.7 FM, The Drive, Genesee Joe Podcast. And right now, we're sitting down with a new friend of the Joe Show, Billy the Liquor Guy. How are you, man?
Good, bud. Nice to be here.
Yeah. Now, you got a very interesting story. You're born and raised in East Utica.
Yes.
And as we were talking off the air, like, we know so many of the same people, the places. But you rose up through the law enforcement ranks and then got into some serious undercover stuff for a long time. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, like you said, I grew up in East Utica, but the interesting factor, which I know had a lot to do with becoming a good undercover agent, was growing up in East Utica, you know, around Bleecker Street, as we refer to the Boulevard of Broken Dreams. But as I got older, my uncle ended up being the deputy police chief of Utica, but my grandfather was in the mafia, so it was kind of a strange household, but exciting.
You saw both sides of the street, so to speak.
Yes, I did, and that put me in a dilemma. I always thought I wanted to be a bad guy, but then, you know, because follow my grandfather's footsteps, because he was the best. And as a little kid, he used to take me around, you know, all the little diners or convenience stores or whatever they had back then, Kossuth Ave, Nickel Street, Blandina, and even bars. Every time I went with him, we got everything free. And then I asked him, Poppy, why do we always get everything free? And he said, that's because respect. What I didn't know, which I found out later, he was making collections. So you learn pretty young.
Yeah. All right. So the new book you've got out is called Under Too Long.
Yes.
And right on the cover, bombs, drugs, untaxed alcohol, terrorism, and undercover agents who brought it all down. You were involved in this whole thing. Tell us a little bit about the book.
Yeah. Okay. The book is all about my exciting life undercover, my dangerous life, which led to, I did not realize at the time, getting PTSD. That's because, you know, I dealt with fatalities. I was involved in some or one, guns pointed to my head, shootouts. And so the book came about very quickly. I was sick for years. I went from chasing bad guys in Tunisia to 3 months after retiring, I couldn't get off the couch. Had no idea what was going on with me. I finally read up on some stuff, and finally I decided, I talked to some therapist, but I went to see a psychiatrist. Yes, when I told him what I'd been through, being at 9/11, when the towers went down, and all sorts of my career after, he said, he explained to me, it's like your brain's like a rubber band. You just can't take no more. So he made me do a journal. After showing up my monthly sessions, after about 6 months, he goes, you got a book here. Yeah. So
now, speaking of 9/11, because you were involved in the investigation afterwards, but can we say the name of the group?
Yeah.
New York State Petroleum Alcohol and Tobacco Bureau. Never even knew there was one.
Right.
You guys, your offices were there, so your coworkers, a lot of them died.
I lost 50 coworkers, 49 that day, and one who died a couple days later with a heart attack. My home office, a lot of good people, but we were a small, I don't want to use the word insignificant, but I will. No one knew about us. Our job was to detect tax evasion, but once they find out after the towers went down, the Al-Qaeda and Hezbollah was all funded by cigarette tax evasion. Very simple. Cigarette taxes are sold very cheap in all other states, specifically Virginia, for about one-tenth of the tax that they charge up here at that time. So our job was to infiltrate the terrorist group. Thus, we got my team from El Babo to Jeff Hu to Brahim, Nick at Night. We went on the road and sold our wares from Virginia to Pennsylvania to even Yonkers, because they were all smuggled from Virginia. And we just end up arresting a lot of terrorists, a lot. They're all shipped back to their different countries, I hope. People ask me, are you worried about it? To my knowledge, they're all somewhere where they're not getting in this country, I hope.
Man, you know, and I was going to ask you that. Do you think that this, like, writing a book was a good idea? Could there be a possible...
They asked me, because obviously it's not me. It looks nothing like me on the cover, plus our faces are smudged out.
Yeah.
But as I went on,
Your face is smudged out right now. I can't even see it.
No, so we'll have to deal with you later. The team comes by. You know, but I am... They let me know.
If that, you know, that quick sense of humor shit is part of why you did so good as an undercover.
Oh, yeah. You know, we were talking that the things happen undercover. The first day of undercover school, once they read my resume, that my grandfather, you know, I owned a bar. I did that too. And
a bar we used to have a ton of fun at. I didn't even know that was you.
Yeah, it was me behind the scenes. Even back then, I wasn't recognizable. But yeah. At the undercover school, the guy's walking around, and there's like 40 of us there. I'm one of 40. 39 of them look like cops. Well, I don't. I'm a heavy-set guy. I wear shorts, ripped T-shirts. I don't care because I'm a street investigator. Well, he comes by and looks at me, and he says, well, did you think about what you were going to wear today to this conference, or did you just pick the stuff up off your closet? I go, no, actually, boss, your mother told me when I left the house this morning what to wear. Well, I thought, okay, but... He laughed, and he said, there's a good undercover. And I've always been lucky to have a quick response. And it's just I attribute that to Bleecker Street, East Utica, from Whitey's at the time, to just how you grew up in East Utica.
You know, I understand that 100% because, you know, even my mother and father, like my mother, you know, patron saint of the church, always at St. Anthony's.
Yes.
Man, she had the quickest tongue.
Yeah.
And, you know, and always ended up something was getting... God bless her, rest her soul. But something was always getting shoved up somebody's ass.
Right.
She had a smart remark for everything, and it usually ended up with something getting shoved up somebody's ass. And that's all from childhood. That's an East Utica thing, man.
That's who you are. And my boss, thank God, Stan, he's the best there is. He protected me because I had a lot of people coming after me on the law enforcement side because they felt I pushed the envelope too much or got too close to the drug dealers, the bomb makers. The terrorists, not so much. It was all business with them. But to do my other stuff, to buy a bomb, I bought a bomb from a white supremacist. I infiltrated a Jamaican gang. I infiltrated a biker gang. Never rode a bike, and I didn't have to because I just supplied them with stuff.
Stuff that they needed.
Yeah, stuff that they needed for their rides.
Biker stuff.
Yeah.
What did you get them? Biker stuff.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's funny, from talking off air, too, this is kind of like movie stuff, Netflix series stuff. Because
I've been contacted by, in fact, I got a producer from Hollywood who did the Tom Hanks movie, Mr. Rogers, I think, or whatever.
Yeah.
We've been in contact with him, but things are slow or, you know, I'm not that famous, but you know, I got to take a shot. But anyways, Netflix, that's my goal, because as everyone that reads it, that really enjoys it, 9 out of 10 people or 99 out of 100 and enjoy it, must be doing well because I'm ranked the top 300. I don't know if it's the United States or the world and autobiographies of law enforcement. So
yeah. Now, but what I was saying was, you kind of were like not a loose cannon, but you adapted to the situation on the fly many, many times.
Yes.
Not all of those stuck with the letter of the law thing.
That
but
is,
it was never something big. It was always some
ball
breaker humor. Ball breaker
type
stuff.
Humor. But I did become Billy the Liquor Guy after a year or two.
Tell us how you got the name Billy the Liquor Guy, because I got a name I've been saddled with Genesee Joe for 30 years. So tell us Billy the Liquor Guy.
Billy the Liquor Guy, very simple. When I was just in the minor stages of undercover work, I was in Binghamton, New York, walked into a dive bar, which, you know, I knew a lot about dive bars.
Every good story starts that way, but please
continue.
It does. Well,
anyways, the guy's like about 4 foot tall, 4 foot wide, and he goes, fucking...
That's okay. It's a podcast.
Oh, okay. Okay. Stains on his shirt, and he goes, well, who the F are you? And I said, I'm Billy Liquor Guy. And it just stuck. Well, plus also in undercover school, or when you're taught to use your first name, obviously not your last, because you don't want to be in a crowded situation and someone's yelling out, Mike. So use your
and
first...
And blowing your cover,
right.
Yeah.
And also undercover school people, you are taught a lot of stuff people don't even think about. If you're going to make a drug deal with somebody, you might be riding in around that car for hours. Learn where the windshield wipers are.
Don't let it look like you've never been in this car before.
Or you just first few minutes, look where the wipers are, look where the lights are, look where the gas tank is.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's stuff like that. But anyways, undercover school just seemed to, I go, am I the only one that thinks this is easy? Again, East Utica, Bleecker Street. Owning a bar, it all just came natural. And like I said, if you open the first chapter about me, basically I'm doing a training operation with some trainers at undercover school, and they thought I was crazy as a bed bug because nothing was getting done. They're sitting on this guy for days before, and the hours I'm sitting with him, and I finally decided just drop me off at the front gate. This is wintertime.
Now, this is a truck full of untaxed cigarettes was coming out.
Yes, coming out of the warehouse facilities, which is secured. And they're just watching it. Long story short, I had them pull up in front of the gate where it opens, and I took all my clothes off but my underwear and my boots.
Right.
Obviously not appreciated by my mentors at the time, but eventually freezing my ass off in Rochester, New York, where the undercover school was. And I begged and pleaded for the guy to let me in, knowing, oh, my God, I just fucked up my undercover career. But I talked the guy in to let me in his van. From that,
How does an almost naked man get into somebody's van? What excuse did you use? You got to tell us.
I told him, I just jumped out of my, I was at some lady's house. Her husband came home, thus justified. I jumped out of the van, and I just need help. I'm freezing. Help me. He let me in, and of course, I go, you got anything warm I could wear? And he goes, maybe there's something in the back. And I just opened like a little partition,
yep.
You know, sheet, towel or whatever. And I go, oh, my God. And I just knew about the criminal activity because I owned a bar.
Yeah.
And I sold everything out of my bar, from half a cow to a lot more illegal stuff.
Yes.
I even mentioned I did a stint in Dannemora in Clinton Correctional Facility because I has a real cop at the time. I worked up there on the border, not as a correction officer, but as an investigator for the Petroleum Alcohol Tobacco Bureau on the Canadian border.
Right.
So.
Wow.
It flowed from there, and I just progressed to.
You know what? I bought a pair of speakers out of your bar when the bar closed down.
Did you?
I think that the thing was nobody was supposed to be in there, but me and my buddy, who will remain nameless, went in there. He bought a pair of Klipsch speakers, and I bought some too.
Well, we didn't know that. You knew my partner. I was there, but I was.
Yeah.
I will just name his first name, Chuck. Everyone, not, you know.
I love that guy.
He's.
I ain't seen him in years, but he was fun.
He was great. Let me tell you, back when things weren't so well, things were going so well at the bar. We were involved in a bunch of things, and Chuck, you know. Let me take the pay for a few months just so I could sustain my lifestyle, because I was a family man at the time.
Right.
So, but that's a lot of Chuck is just, and I always owe a, he's just a great guy. A lot of people misunderstand him, but you got to get to know him.
Yeah. You know? All right. So let's move on now. 9/11 happens.
Yes.
You're involved in the investigation behind that.
Yes.
And what about that? Just fill us in. I mean, you guys helped bring down the people
who
did it.
After they had found out investigation, but the feds, who had more, you know, obviously pull at that time, they found out that Al-Qaeda supplemented that terrorist attack by cigarette smuggling, which is very,
yeah, we talked about,
were
yeah.
very beneficial. So my boss, we were doing the investigation, and he's hearing things about me and this guy upstate who's kind of out of it. Or, you know,
rogue. Kind of a rogue.
In fact, on my report or whatever they do says I'm unsupervisable. So right away, he wanted to meet me, calls me down his office, big, beautiful offices, top of some building in New York City, because, again, we no longer had an office in the trades at the towers. And I got, there's all these stickies all over my file. I go, oh, fuck, I'm getting fired.
Yeah, exactly.
Because I know I pissed off a lot of people because I just bent
over
the rules.
4 or 5 sticky notes. Probably you're in trouble on that file.
You got that one, Genesee Joe. So anyways, he looks at me and he goes, so, you own the bar? I go, yes, sir. He goes, well, tell me about the bar. I said, well, I opened up at 4, and I tended till, you know, 1, 2 o'clock. It was me and my partner. He goes, no. He goes, I give 2 shits about your bar. What criminal activity did you? I said, oh.
Oh, the other side.
The other side.
Yeah.
And actually, like my cousin Frank, who's with me now, was at my boss's house. And the book came out I was just going to be, even before the PTSD, I was just going to be a sub note in the book because he was writing the book.
Right.
But it was all about the agencies and, blowing them out of the water for different inefficiencies.
Yep.
So anyways. The screenwriter doing the book says, I know you got more. Tom's told me all these stories. I said, yeah. Well, about the third time, again, I'm with my cousin Frank, and we're sitting at the big table, and I go, listen, statute of limitations are up, so I can start telling you about stuff. And as my cousin Frank is watching, and she started writing like a motherfucker. You know, she's writing everything down. So we laughed. In fact, I got my boss going. He goes, well, I said, there's nothing we didn't do. I go, in fact, we actually tried to rob the operation, or just jokingly, we had talked about it. And Tom goes, what? I go, who? I go, you guys. Because funny as it might be, my buddy Jeff his job was to go pick up the truck after we're done the next morning. And he calls me about 6 in the morning at my hotel. He goes, hey, I got to ask you something. Is there something I should know about before I call everybody? Because we've been robbed. So we were looked at, but as always, and found innocent because I'd never There was accusations I took $1.3 million because that was missing from my last detail. That's in the book, too.
Wow.
Subsequently, I got interviewed numerous times. I said I have no knowledge of that missing $1.3 million. You know, some people think I do, but I don't. I have no knowledge.
And an unrelated note, would you like to buy a local radio station?
Yes, I would, buddy. I talked to some people at Marlog's, my new hangout, and I joke with them because even they ask, hey, some of them ask, when are you going to deposit money in my bank? And I go, well, what do you mean? He goes, well, you know, he goes, is it dirty? I go, absolutely. He goes, never mind.
But oh my God.
Going back to 9/11, we went there the next day. I was actually in Albany, thank God. And I went down there, but you see something good. I saw law enforcement from all over the country, if not the world. Louisiana, Texas, California, you know, Canada, with police cars, fire trucks, everyone just doing a job to correct it. But then, like I said, my boss called me in. Once he asked me to go to undercover school, and then he asked, so is your grandfather really in the mafia? I go, yeah. I said, he drove for Joe Falcone, a big personality in our time growing
another
up.
Local, yeah, legend.
Entrepreneur.
Yeah.
And my grandfather went to jail twice because he never spoke up, so we had a lot of credibility. And, like, we got new sidewalks every year in front of my house on my old house on Rutgers Street. And I just found out I live near you.
You live near my grandmother, yeah, right up the street.
East Utica's like that, and I still possess a lot of East Utica. That's why, and this local East Utica, but all around, has been great to me, you know, from after the book. And but I can't plug people enough. I got hit with PTSD. Thank God for my psychiatrist. Thank God for my cousin. Like I say, Frank, he took me everywhere to get me out. I hated him because he'd come at 8, 9 in the morning, and I'd be looking at the clock, 3 or more, 3, 4, 5. Sure enough, 8 o'clock, I hear that fucking knock. And I was a shell of myself. I don't want to do nothing. But then he actually took me to the Rome Y, where I like to swim. And from there, I started even more my healing process because the aquatics program there is awesome. The instructors are great. The pool, I just told them, I said, hey, listen, I'm suffering from some stuff. And they just took me under their wing, and I went slowly to get used to doing stuff.
So is that kind of the point of the book, besides all the funny stories?
Yes.
There's redemption on this whole thing. Because you saw some serious shit undercover. We're laughing about stuff.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
But it caused PTSD. So is that like the point of the book?
It was. In fact, when I start doing it, and you know, I had some issues with the publisher, and that's why I'm doing a second one, not to tell only where the $1.3 million is, just to say about thankful to PTSD, and we've basically agreed on that because that's why I became back to my old person. But it took a lot of years. Took therapy, took psychiatrist, took some meds, some good meds. Yeah. You know, but people like my cousin Frank, the Y, helped me out with but it's dedicated to the PTSD because now because I do a lot of talks for PTSD groups. And basically it's, you know, when I go in, they look at, oh, who's this old fat guy? You know, what's he going to, that always comes out. I got to listen to his war stories. And I said, listen, all he says, hey, who's had a bad week? You know, someone, you know, raises their hand. Then I said, who's had a bad month? Some more raised their hand. I said, who tried to kill themselves? No one raised their hand, but I raised my hand.
Yeah.
And that gets their attention.
Yeah.
Because by the luck of God, you know, just wasn't my time.
A kid that used to live next door.
Yeah.
Wonderful kid. But man.
Yeah.
I just would always hope he got the help he needed. I lost track of him.
Right.
But
shit happens. But again, that was my calling card. In fact, just by an incident, you know, I said, I'm not going to put my family through this. When you don't have a good day all day, every day for years, you think about different things you would never think about in your whole life. So,
yeah.
Again, anybody with PTSD think you can't? You can deal with it. It's always there. I have some episodes sometimes, but get help, therapy, talk to somebody, because it can be dealt with. You know, just don't go down that. Don't make that. What's the saying for it? You made a
permanent decision to a temporary problem.
You got it. Permanent decision to a temporary problem, because you can't come back from that. So.
Now, I know you got a list of people you want to say thank you to, and we'll get to that. But
okay.
There is a funny story that, once again, is something out of a movie where one bureau of government that you were working undercover for.
Right.
And the FBI did not see eye to eye.
Right, right.
And you had an informant who ended up going to Tunisia, but the story of how they said, get him out of here, down the back stairs now.
Yeah, I was in the area. I'll keep this very simple. And a certain federal agency was looking for an informant who's been good to us, and but he'd been made.
Yeah.
So his life was in danger.
Yep.
So a certain agency still wanted to use him, which, you know, you could.
Would have got him killed.
Would have, exactly. He would have maybe, they knew the terrorist group, because he was responsible for every arrest we made with a terrorist was because of his help.
Wow.
By being he worked in the warehouse with us, and Arabs, like, will not deal with anybody else but an Arab.
Yeah.
So we had him to do formally in our deals. We did them. But anyways, I was summoned at the time to come to New York City and give, we'll say this gentleman, because to expedite his travel plans. So I took him to the airport, put him on a plane. I just said, here's, we had some money for him.
Slush fund. Got him on a plane.
But the
FBI was downstairs coming to get him.
Yeah, and they were
So they went up the front stairs and you took him out the back door, basically.
Back elevator, right?
elevators work, brother.
Again, not to, but they, a lot of, I've learned, I got close to my bad guys, real close.
Yeah.
Double J, I went to his nephew's funeral, his daughter's christening. But that's how it works. But you do get close to these people. Other than the terrorists, they're not really, you know, because of circumstances.
They're all business.
Yeah, they became who they became. It is just, you know, who knows where we would have been if we grew up in an environment of criminal activity all the way. I grew up with some criminal activity. I turned into a crook, but all good undercover. But long story short, got him there. He'd been not hurt for about a few years. But then, in fact, he went there. He took care of his sister. Now, he didn't have a medical plan, but he took care of his sister who had cancer and paid over $500,000 cash.
Wow.
For her treatment. Yeah, but he had worked years. I mean, he was a salesman. He was a crook. He would sell anything.
Yeah.
In fact, I remember I go, Saeed, why do you do this? I said, you're such a smart guy. He said, Billy, how much... No, not to make fun. How much you make? 60,000, 70,000? I go, yeah, you know, but, you know, back at the beginning, yeah, in a good year. He goes, and you pay taxes. Yeah. He says, and you do all everything right. And how much you got left at the end of the year? I go, I'm broke. He goes, me? I got $300,000 in the bank because everything I sell is non-taxable. And he said, and I said, but again, he was a good guy. He explained it to me in his way, the way he grew up.
Yes.
But anyways, I have to go back to Tunisia to get him, fast forward years, because they said safe to come back. They wanted to see if he wanted to do something. He wanted to come back to his family because he had family here.
Yeah.
So my boss asked me, hey, you want to go to Africa or Tunisia? And I had to think, too. I go, Tunisia? I go, New York? He goes, no. No, you dumb bastard, Africa. I go, okay. I go, yeah. So I get on a plane. I go to Tunisia.
Yeah.
And you land.
And you found him.
I found them. You know, I get this, the town wasn't there. There's like little sub-towns. Anyways, I get off the airport plane. I go, oh, wow, this is messed up. You know, I have a little trouble getting through to. I actually had a gold shield from my job. Then I was in the airport. I was treated as royalty. But as I'm leaving the airport, I go, wow, there's a lot of guys with guns with uniforms. As I get in the town of Tunisia, there's a lot of guys with guns without uniforms. I said, Billy, this ain't Kansas.
Yeah.
And then the hotel was protected by cement pillars that go up and down to let you in the hotel. Then I had to go through another screening when I went into the hotel. So back then, they know how to deal with terrorism more than we do because we're not that experienced with it up until obviously, you know. The only thing sad about 2000, you know, 9/11 was people forget about that shit.
Yeah.
You know, they just go on their merry way. And some people, they worry about, you know, I mean, I've met a lot of great cops. And there's some bad ones, assholes out there. I'll tell you, I've met them too.
Yeah.
But the 90% plus majority are good cops who they'll put their life on the line just to protect everybody. And it's a shame sometimes some people don't see that.
Yeah.
That's all. But, you know, I try to keep my political views to myself because I've been cancel cultured a few times.
Well, you know, too, in your worldview from knowing the both sides of this, working directly with both sides all at once,
you know...
Why guys are doing the wrong thing.
I know.
How it happened to them. You know the psyche behind what they're doing.
Yeah, and I go, some people go, sometimes the racial stuff comes up, and I go, my best friend's on the cover of the book. He's of African American. I have a grandson that's, you know, biracial.
Yeah.
I said, so don't question, don't make because of some stuff I might have done on the job, which occurred during the heat of a gunfight.
Yeah.
But that's Billy the Liquor guy. But things you don't say when we got we're going to get robbed by two Africans who pulled shotguns out and were going to kill us. You don't say, sir, would you mind put that shotgun down, please?
You dropped the N-word and got in trouble for
it. Well, yeah, but no, I said, things happen in a situation, and I just said, I'll blow your fucking head off.
Yeah.
You know, I said, and it happened, and all things ended well, but I did get in trouble because I used some foul language I was told by the internal affairs who never work out in the street. But again, that's language that's on the street.
That's what happens. You have to adapt on the fly.
Yeah.
They got to buy it.
If it was a Polish person, I'm half Polish. I would have said, geez, you dumb. As we grew up, we just identified people in different views of my growing up in the 60s and the 70s in East Utica.
Yeah.
But again, my dad always taught me, my dad always taught me, treat everyone the same, and there's idiots of all different ethnicities. And that's what I followed. You know, I mean, like I said, in fact, sometimes you're kind of fooled, like my buddy on the book, Chaz. You know, he's a person of color and great guy, though. You know, grew up in Saratoga, New York, great guy, educated. And I'm saying, he started to pull a race card out one day when we're driving. I go, Chad, don't pull that shit on me. He goes, no, Bill, you don't understand. And again, he goes, no, Chad, come on. I grew up in East Utica. I played all sorts of sports, inner city. I coached inner city. I said, Billy, there's a lot of people that don't think that way. I go, you know, that's getting old, you know, for me. Because he goes, we stopped at a Men's Warehouse store. He was dressed in a suit and stuff, how he was, because we were going somewhere. And I'll say this, in Plattsburgh, New York, which they do have Men's Warehouse stores.
Yeah.
I walked in my shorts, ripped T-shirt, and sneakers. They followed him around.
Yeah.
The store clerks. And I was, again, that was a shock to me. We're talking 1995, because how I grew up was everyone is the same.
Yeah.
So, but
everybody was in and out of the house growing up.
Yeah.
There was all kinds.
All kinds. And we were fortunate to grow up in East Utica, all different ethnicities, again, with Bleecker Street and stuff. So, but.
All right. Well, listen, Under Too Long, Billy the Liquor Guy, where can people get this book? And I know that this is going to be a podcast, but tomorrow, which is the 9th of October, you're doing a book signing at
Peter's Cornucopia. And he has a lot to do with it. Peter was great. When I start suffering from the PTSD, he helped me through that with a lot of advice of natural remedies instead of over-pilling it.
Yeah.
And so Peter was always great. So I try to pay back the local community, and Peter had a lot to do with getting me on the road to healthiness. So, yes, I'm doing a radio. Z's going to be there. Disruption Network's going to be recording it, doing a live feed from what I'm told.
Yep.
And then I'm going to do a book signing at the New Hartford store, Peter's Cornucopia, from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. if it lasts that long. So if you want a 30% deal at Peter's, stop by, meet Billy the Liquor Guy, but I will have a couple guys.
Keeping
an eye on me. That's the best way I can say it. So for any of you bad guys out there, don't be stupid.
All right, and it's available through Amazon and all Amazon, the places you usually get books.
And they get it. You come to the sign, you get a better price, or you come there, I sign, and you get a better price.
There you go.
But I do pay the taxes. But as you said, I just wanted to give a shout-out to local people that have been good to me, from like Killebrews, Voltsy. In fact, I'm here because
you met our owner, Mindy.
I met your owner up there, and so it's awesome. And I got people from up north that have been good to me up in my second home in Plattsburgh, from Baker's Acres to Foster Printing, who does my T-shirts. You know, and also Tiny's, who did a nice, great job with a book signing. I have books at Deansboro Superette.
I like that place.
Johnny Gazelle, a good friend of mine, just passed.
Yep.
And it's a big loss to everybody. But his daughters are there, especially Michelle. Still, the subs are great. So, you know, I'm big on local. And Marlugs has been a second home to me. It was like my Whitey's when I grew up, because Marlugs is, I haven't seen people in 40 years.
Yeah.
That I see there now.
Oh, yeah.
So they're like awesome. So, but. Hey.
That is a great place, first of all. My uncle went there every day for years.
Yeah. And he's got the best breakfast. We're going to do something there, but it's going to be a closed door session. So it'll be more of a tell when I do the one at Marlugs.
I want to go to that.
That'll be a fun time, because people always ask me, where's the money? Where's the money? I go, you see how I'm dressed, buddy? You think I got money?
Yeah. Well, look around you. People say, there's money in radio. And I go, look.
Yeah, I know, buddy.
Look at the rubric. Yeah.
I heard, and I appreciate you for taking me on, because like the Z, who's like my manager, I think he's hanging on for the money.
He's looking around. That guy loves to get stories like yours out.
He's the best.
He's such a cool guy, man.
He is, man. He's there. He's got a ton of energy. He must work 28 hours a day.
Oh, God, yeah.
I was at his studio yesterday with one of my new agents, or my new publicity person, and called you on the phone, and you said, yeah.
Yeah, because we've been talking about this for a couple of weeks.
I know, but he said, and he's also hooked me up with, I guess, hopefully to get signed up with Paul Buckley. He does some stuff.
Yeah.
So,
yep.
But I'd like to do anything locally as I can, yes, to get the promotion, but to promote the city. The mayor's been great.
Yeah.
You know, even Robbie says he beat me up in high school, but I kind of don't remember that. But he says he did, so he wouldn't lie. You know what I'm saying? But again, I went to high school with the mayor.
There you go.
I grew up kind of with our county executive on Bleecker Street when we were youngins, Tony. So, but like you said, I'm talking to you. Within 5 minutes, we felt like we knew everybody.
Yeah, it really did. Every name you dropped, I know this guy, I know that guy, I know guys that worked for you at the bar years ago.
Yeah, from the Pomisanos to the Gazillies to it's like people that were, but I feel like I'm starting to, you should have just grow.
Yeah.
I was gone for 20 years, you know, in fact. My family didn't like it. I used to say, where you been? I've been away from 10 to 20.
Yeah, exactly. All right, my man, we're going to wrap the podcast up here. Thank you for stopping in. You're welcome to come back anytime you want.
Thank you, buddy. Yeah, man, I apologize to people. I let them know it was at 1. My bad, but I'll try to get it out to you people that it's at 6:20, and I'll make sure I have the right time the next time we do it.
There you go.